Okay, I'm calling the meeting of the Bolton Planning and Zoning Commission to order at 7:32. And I'm going to appoint Kwan Gordon for Jeff Scala. And I'm going to appoint Tom Crockett for Brittany Clark.
Before you do that, Tom, did you listen to the hearing tape from last meeting?
This time?
I did.
Yeah. Crockett? No, I didn't.
Okay, so then I would suggest, Tom, Manning, that you appoint Rodney.
Rodney, okay. I'm trying to share the wealth.
Right. No, I understand. And just while we're on that subject, Tom Robbins, did you listen to the tape from last meeting?
I did.
Okay. So that's all right.
Okay. All right. Then the next we had set the public hearings for 7:30 so that we wouldn't have to have dead air, but we're going to go ahead with the approval of minutes. Are there any corrections, changes?
I don't see any hands.
You don't see any hands? Okay. And if there's no changes, I'll declare them approved. I think I can do that under Robert's Rules of Order.
You want to vote for that? You want a motion?
Want to vote? Okay.
Yeah, I take a motion and do it that way.
All right. Then I move adoption of the minutes as distributed. Any second?
I'll second.
Second, Rodney. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Jim Cropley. I abstain. I wasn't at the meeting. I didn't listen to it.
Okay.
So I've got 6-0-1.
Okay. Residence Forum. Is anyone present who wants to speak to an item that's not on the agenda?
Hands either.
Staff reports.
Mr. Chairman, if you want to push that one for later, Mike is in another meeting and he'll join us shortly. So if you want
to. Okay, well, then we'll just start the public hearing. Do you need to read the call for continuation?
There was no call because both were continued. So there was
okay,
no legal
continuations. Okay. Then we will continue the special permit application for 15,000 square foot pre-engineered metal building addition for light manufacturing, 837 Boston Turnpike, Able Coil and Electronics Company, number PL-22-4. And I think we had some leftover items from the town engineer.
Were we down to drainage and lighting or something?
Right. We have, since the last meeting, the applicant's engineer has provided revised plans and calculations. You have seen a report from the town engineer approving of those plans and calculations. There was one issue in the town engineer's report regarding screening to the south of the project. Now that the basin has gotten bigger and the clearing and grading goes down to 20 feet from the property line. I know that there is a lot of natural screening there. We've seen pictures of that. I believe that Randy Becker for the applicant has additional pictures that he may want to share tonight if you want to look at that. I think some of the concern was, you know, during the winter, these pictures are obviously at this time of year. And I just, I don't know, Randy, if you want to share those or if you have anything else you'd like to share.
Sure, I could discuss this. I have the photos.
Okay.
Am I being shared?
You should be. If you can't, I can share them, but you should be able to share. No?
Do you see the photo that I have?
No.
Okay. So what do I need to do to share that?
You should just be able to share the screen. Let me just see if I can find them here.
Move the cursor into the screen.
Okay.
Is that you or me?
Hello, is that you?
That was me. All right, I'll okay. do it then. No right. problem. Not a problem at all.
They're the same photo, so either one of us can.
Okay.
Okay. So this is a view looking to the south, standing in the proposed parking area. And to the left would be the southeast, which, as you can see, is it goes upgrade as well as heavily wooded, primarily with deciduous trees, as was mentioned. There are a couple of hemlocks in the shady areas. And then due south of the photo, which would be straight ahead in the photo, the grade dropped down pretty sharply. There are still some large trees. Looking forward, you're still on the applicant's property because he owns almost 40 acres here. But to the southeast, there is a 25-foot set of buffer setback. And even though it's wooded there, as was mentioned, if you know, three or four hemlock trees were stagger planted right there, because behind the detention basin, it's going to be grass, like a grassy hill. And one of the photos that I did send here shows the existing existing detention basin, what it looks like. It's basically a grassy hill.
Yeah, let me see if I can find that, Randy.
Yeah, it's one of the last ones.
That's not it, right?
No.
Do you know what number it was? If you knew the number.
The last one I sent you.
That's 7775767378 79.
Unless you let me share, and then I'll pick it out. If you let me share the screen.
It says you should be able to do it.
Okay.
I just don't.
All right. I'll try.
Just move your cursor just up and you'll see share screen in green right
there. You go. Yeah.
Okay. So this photo here is the backside. Here's the over where the cursor is. This is the edge of the existing detention basin. And the backside of this goes down slope. And you can see, you know, grass and some low-lying vegetation grows on this hill. This is what would be seen. Now, in the wintertime, you'd probably see snow, okay? But the point I'm trying to make is, even if you see this hill covered with snow and or grass, you'll never see the parking lot from that aspect because it's up pretty high from, you know, the point of view from the existing house down the neighbor's property there. You would never see above the hill from that aspect. So whether there's a few hemlock trees there that gets planted, again, you're looking up a hill, so you would probably see the grassy hill nonetheless, even if you'd have to wait quite a few years for those trees to get large enough to screen the hill, obviously. I'm sure the owner would be willing to do anything to help satisfy the requirement. It's not a pushback at all. It's just, you know, what would be a reasonable approach to this? And I think having the vegetation on that hill, which would be, is also going to be stabilized with a polypropylene erosion control mat, which is a very long lasting erosion control system with the grass growing between the netting of it and so on. So the hill will be stabilized and will have vegetation growing on it. I'm sure if there's a, you know, the requirement for a few hemlock trees, it wouldn't grow on a hill, but they would have to be in the bottom of the hill. Again, I think you'd see over the tops of those trees and the grassy hill nonetheless. So, I mean, it's kind of, it's open for discussion.
Randy, in image 1979, the one your cursor is on.
Okay.
What is the back in the background? Is it looks like a guide rail.
The guide rail is the existing. It's the edge of the parking lot behind.
Okay, so that's the parking building. Lot. Okay.
That's a parking lot. Yes.
Okay. It's not the state road. It's the parking lot.
No. This is well into the property. You know, the detention base is sort of to the right of this berm. This is actually a berm. And in some cases where we've designed sites, berms similar to this are introduced to do the screening, to do the actual partially blocking the views. So by having this berm, this grassy berm already prevents someone from looking into the detention basin. You would never, again, if looking at the plan, you would never see into the basin from the bottom of the hill where the house is. There's you know, it would be, all you would see is the side of the hill. So I just wanted to address that because I went out there today and took these photos. I said, you know, it's for discussion. We're open for discussion. So whatever we think is best to, these other photos here are just shots of the adjacent woods there, looking down the hill. This old stump is actually the property corner of the neighbor's property. This is the top northwest corner of the neighbor's property at this stump. And as you could see, looking down toward the house would be, you know, pretty much straight ahead in this view. You don't see the house. Again, in the winter, it's a different story. You would probably see it through, you know, the bare trees. And what else do I have here? Again, there's another view looking down that slope. This is looking into the owner's property. So you can see it goes down and kind of toward the southeast. The hill kind of meanders toward the southeast, which the outlet structure of the detention basin, it would ultimately flow onto the owner's property into the 37 remaining acres down here. See what else did I do? Oh, this is a shot closer to the end of where the detention basin is going to be. You can see we did some test holes and there's a little bit of disturbance here from the test pits we dug. But the ground goes up to the east, down to the south, and particularly to southwest. Toward the southeast, I'm pointing the camera at the neighbor's house, and I can't see it through these trees. Again, wintertime is a different story. Understood.
So from Joe's perspective and the staff's perspective, there's a regulation 15H that requires a landscape buffer strip 10 feet in width consisting of a solid screen of evergreens measuring at least 4 feet in height and 4 feet on center at the time of initial use of the area when something is abutting a residential zone. So what we're suggesting from the staff perspective is because there is such a tremendous amount of woods there, and we don't really know to what extent you're going to be clearing further, that once the basin is in and the clearing is done and you've put the, you know, property back to where it's finished, we could then look at it and make a determination with the applicant if anything further is needed to create that that screening.
Teresa, I think that's a very fair approach. You know, it needs to be seen. It needs to be, you know, once the work is completed there, it would be obvious to leave it be or to add the screening. So I think it's a fair approach.
You can stop sharing your screen, I think, Mr. Chairman, is that okay?
Yes. Patrice, have you included that as a condition in your suggested motion?
I have. I think it was number 8.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
I mean, the other items, you know, there's the standard items that we look for. Anything that's going to DOT, we would want copies of. We're not controlling the traffic here, but the traffic would be just moving from Howard Road over into this parking lot at this point, because he's basically moving the business from Howard Road to here. So we don't have control of that. That's between the owner and DOT, but I don't see that as being an issue at all. There were some comments made by the fire marshal about building identification. I think we've included that in the any sort of conditions. The fire department and the fire chief want to just look at the area for fire lane, and that can be worked out between the fire department and the applicant at when the building goes in. We've already approved for this lot a zone change, and there'll have to be a separate lot line reconfiguration that gets filed prior to this plan getting filed, so that this plan would be on the correct lot at that point. The basin and the screening we just discussed, there was a site completion bond in one of the things I sent out, approved by the town engineer for $187,432, rounding it. And that includes a contingency. There was also an erosion control bond of $9,257. The applicant still has to go to the sewer authority, the Bolton Lakes Regional Water Pollution Control Authority, and he has written a letter, and they are going to be placing him, I believe it's on the October agenda, so that should be plenty of time for construction. The other items are just some of the standard items we request. I do believe we need to grant a waiver of section 15H that asks about landscaping in the proposed parking areas. Typically that regulation requires that, I think it's every 10 spaces, there is an island or something of planting. It's way back in the woods. I don't really think it's a necessary item at this point. And we did waive it for the parking lot just above for Able Coil's other part. I don't believe, Randy, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe there are any other waivers that were needed.
No, I don't believe so. I think we've met all the other requirements. We did add a fire lane to the drawing, and we also, just a note, for the sewer tie-in, it's completely on the owner's property. There is no road opening or repaving or anything, traffic control necessary or anything. It's completely, the stub is completely on Steve Rockefeller's property. So it makes it a little easier to do the tie-in. So I just wanted to mention that as well. There's absolutely no interruption to traffic or whatever.
So from the staff perspective, Mr. Chairman, I think we're in good shape with the conditions that were listed in the suggested motion.
Are there any comments or questions from the commission?
I don't see any.
I don't see any.
From Rodney.
Yes, Rodney.
There's no comments here. I think they did a great job coming together and coming up with a good plan.
Thank you.
And from anyone else? A motion to close the public hearing at this point would be appropriate. So move. Is there a second?
I'll second it. Rodney?
All in favor say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Jim Cropley, aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes and this public hearing is closed.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for the effort you've put in. Okay. Now, I understand that we need an extension for Villa Luisa.
Yes. The public hearing opened at our last meeting and your 30 days, 35 days is up. The applicant has sent an email dated Wednesday, September 14th, which is today, telling us that he cannot partake in the meeting. He's still waiting for the engineer to get back to him with an updated plan. He is hereby requesting a 30-day extension to continue the hearing to October 12th, 2022. And so with that, I would say you would have a motion to accept his extension and continue the hearing to October 12th, 2022 at 7:30, I guess.
I so move. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Rodney seconds. All in favor say aye or raise your hand.
Jim Cropley, aye.
Aye.
Looks like all ayes.
All ayes. And the motion passes and the hearing is continued. Let's see what else we old business six. Let's go on to this and we'll have staff reports at the end. Discussion possible decision on PL-22-4, and we have a proposed motion, which I will make. I make a motion to approve Able Coil and Electronics Company's special permit with site plan review for a 15,000 square foot pre-engineered metal building addition for light manufacturing at 837 Boston Turnpike, Able Coil, application number PL-22-4, in accordance with the application and site plans and details submitted as Able Coil Electronics, 837 Boston Turnpike, Bolton, Connecticut, 3 sheets, and erosion sedimentation plan, 1 sheet, revised through 9/9/2022. Site lighting plan, 1 sheet, revised through 6/27/2022. And exterior elevations and floor plan, 2 sheets, revised through 8/31/2022, which is conditioned on the following. 1. All appropriate seals and signatures of the design professionals for this plan shall be placed on the plans before recording. 2. The approval letter shall be placed on the Mylars to be recorded in the office of the town clerk. 3. A copy of any required submission to the Connecticut Department of Transportation shall be submitted to the building department. 4. This approval is subject to compliance with any comments or requirements of the Health District, Fire Marshal, Fire Chief, Town Engineer, Inland Wetlands Commission, and the Bolton Lakes Regional Water Pollution Control Authority. 5, readily visible building identification numbers and directions noting the rear building and the front driveway shall be installed on site. 6, fire department access to the building side facing the rear parking lot is reasonable, but owner will work with the fire chief to identify an adequate fire lane. 7, a separate lot line reconfiguration plan and application to dissolve the property line between 837 and 889 Boston Turnpike and to move the property line between lots 1 and 2 at 889 Boston Turnpike will need to be submitted, approved, and filed with the town clerk prior to the town's execution of the final milars for this application. 8, once the basin is installed and clearing is done, the applicant shall be required to add screening to the south of the basin if it is needed to maintain a complete screening from the R1 properties per sections 15H, 16A3Q5, 16B4M1, and 16B4N4.
I second that motion, Jim Crawford. Oh,
9. I'm not done yet.
Oh.
I had to take a drink after that one. Once the basin, no, sorry, 9, a site completion bond in accordance with section 16A4I, which includes a 20% contingency in the amount of $187,432, shall be posted prior to the commencement of work on the site. Should items covered by this bond not be constructed within a year from approval, an appropriate escalation factor shall be reviewed by the town engineer and applied if warranted. 10, an erosion control bond of $9,257 shall be posted as part of the permit process prior to any work commencing on the site. 11, comply with conditions imposed by the Bolton Lakes Regional Water Pollution Control Authority. Purchase additional EDUs as determined by the authority. Apply for and gain approval for permits to connect to the existing sanitary sewer service lateral as approved by the authority. Pay all associated fees and post the required bonds for the sewer connection. D, install a water meter to be read by a representative of the authority at or about the time of the issuance of a certificate of occupancy and at intervals as determined by the authority to monitor water usage. 12, this approval shall be binding to the applicant, landowner, and their successors and assigns. 13, prior to the issuance of a certification of zoning compliance, final grading, stabilization, and seating shall be in place or adequate bond filed with the town. Prior to the issuance of a certificate of zoning compliance, one electronic PDF and paper copy of the final as-built survey showing structures, pins, driveways, and parking, final floor elevations, and spot grade should be submitted. Additional erosion and sedimentation controls may be required by town staff as necessitated by field conditions. 16, by acceptance of this approval and its conditions, the applicant, owner, and or their successors and assigns acknowledge the right of town staff to periodically enter upon the subject property for the purposes of determining compliance with the terms of this approval. The Planning and Zoning Commission approves the following waiver requested by the applicant. 1, waive section 15H landscaping in the proposed parking areas. The Planning and Zoning Commission finds with these conditions the plan meets the requirements of the Bolton zoning regulations. Now for a second.
Jim Cropley, I second that.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any discussion?
I would like to just make sure that the client knows of all these terms previous to this, or are these, Randy, are all in your
Yeah, these are topics that we're aware of. The newest one was the screening, but we're aware of all the other requirements and conditions.
Just seemed like a lot. Okay, thank you.
We are aware of it. I did do a survey, lot line modification, when I submitted with the zoning approval. If that needs to be submitted again, I'm not sure, because I had the Schedule A's and everything
completed. It doesn't need to be submitted again. It needs to be filed with the town clerk's office.
Okay, we'll file it.
Perfect. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just going to add that that is a plethora of conditions there. I feel like I need a glossary of terms to really sort that through. So I just wanted to say that there are actionable plans in place or something in the works to satisfy all of those particular conditions. That was a question.
Yes. I would say yes, Kwan, that is the case.
Okay, that's all, thanks.
Yeah, this Jim Cropley, you know, the only thing I think we should do is, you know, when we require screenings, we should look at the condition that's there and what we're requiring them to plant and what's going to happen in the future, because that's a really shady area. And if we go in there and say they should put hemlocks in, the hemlocks would probably do fine for the first few years, but as the tree line continues to grow and fill in, the hemlock is going to die. So I think, you know, when someone comes up with the idea that they need screening, they should just note what they're planting so that, you know, the applicant isn't wasting his money putting something in that's going to eventually die, and the homeowner's going to be happy. But in 4 years, when it dies because there's not enough sunlight in there, they're not going to be happy either. That's the only comment.
Good. It's a good point. And that's why we've got it as, you know, taking a look at it in the different season and after they're done constructing.
Yeah.
So that's a very good point.
Thank you, Jim. Is there any other discussion?
Yeah, Tom, I'm on the screening. I recommended the hemlock as a shade tolerant species, as opposed to say a white pine, which needs more sun. Jim's comment is very well said. We need to see what kind of shade is there, what kind of sun, and we, you know, if it's decided that screening is needed, again, we're open to suggestion and, you know, something to satisfy the requirement.
Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll move to a vote. And this time we will call the roll. Arlene?
Aye.
Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Rodney Fournier?
Aye.
Jim Cropley?
Aye.
Kwan Gordon?
Aye.
Tom Crockett?
I'm not voting tonight.
He's not seated.
But I would vote aye if I was voting, but I'm not voting.
Kwan and...
Okay.
Did Kwan vote?
Yeah.
I did.
All right, so Tom Manning?
And Tom Manning votes aye. We're still shy.
Tom, Jim, Arlene, Tom Robbins, Rodney, Kwan.
Yes. We didn't replace Jeremy.
You did. You replaced Jeremy with Rodney.
Well, how about Brittany Clark? You got Brittany Clark.
Brittany you Clark. You didn't replace Brittany, but Jim, Tom can't vote anyway. So I think you just leave it at six.
Okay.
And one abstain.
Yeah, if he's not seated at 6-0-0 is fine.
Okay.
So it is unanimous.
And the motion passes, and thank you very much to Abel Coyle. And we wish you the best in this expansion of your business.
Thank you very much, Tom. I will say that Steve Rockefeller was unable to attend tonight because he had a family emergency. He had to bring his daughter to the ER. So that's why he's not here. But thank you all for your assistance and your support. Thank you.
I just had one quick question. Can they start effective immediately on this project now, or is there a waiting period?
Well,
we've got stuff to do, and there is an appeal period, although I don't expect an appeal, but there are things to file and all of that. So within the next several weeks.
How long's the appeal period?
We're also hoping that we line up with the Water Pollution Control Authority's
right.
Which is meeting in October. So gives us several weeks to get prepared. We need to do some pricing, sign a contract with the owner and so on, and prepare scheduling and so on. So there's plenty of stuff to do before it starts.
But it starts tonight, you all said.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to suggest that we take the agenda out of order, if you can, and move to new business by consensus okay. A.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay. We will go to new business A, application modification of special permit application for gas station convenience store, 271 Hop River Road, Nathaniel Fleming, number PL-22-8. And so we need to receive the application and set a public hearing. Is that the idea?
That is the idea. It's basically they're coming back to modify the previously approved application. And in this case, and Nathaniel, you can jump in when I'm wrong here, but they're reconstructing the building brand new this time instead of trying to rehab the old building and still moving some things around, parking, adding the drive-through. They've been through the Wetlands Commission and received approval. The path to the Hop River Trail is still in place. I'm not sure what else you're changing outside of those items.
That's pretty much it. I mean, we're adding a detention basin in the back instead of those rain gardens, but more or less, we're not reusing the building. We're removing it and then building a new building further back.
They have submitted plans, architectural plans, application fees, and what have you. So it would be appropriate to receive the application and set the hearing for October 12th. That's your next meeting.
Then I move that we accept
receive.
That we accept application PL-22-8 and set a public hearing for 7:30 p.m. online at our next meeting on October 12th, 2022. Is that all the information I need? I think so.
Yes.
I'll second that.
Okay, and I'll call the roll on this one also. Arlene?
Aye.
Tom Robbins?
Aye.
Rodney Fournier?
Aye.
Jim Cropley?
Aye.
Quan Gordon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have no other new business, Mr. Chairman. So if you want to revert back to either staff reports.
Yes, 6B, we did not continue the public hearing, so there's no discussion or decision. And I would like to get staff reports before we talk about cannabis.
Okay.
Now that Mike is here.
Mike, I can start on my end. We have finished the codification review for wetland subdivision and zoning. And so it is now with the codification people. I presume they'll make their changes based on what we've submitted. And I believe we'll get another look at that before anything else happens. I don't know what the timeframe for that will be. Besides the applications that you've got on your agenda, I've also been working on with the four town advisory committee, and you will see in the next couple weeks, I believe it's going to start on the 26th of September, a survey going out with some questions on it regarding the four town branding and logo kind of thing for the four towns. I will send you something to remind you to take the survey, and anybody in the four towns can take the survey. So get your friends and family together and take that survey. And also we have an intern starting from UConn who's working on that project with the four towns, and he's going to be shared between the four towns and in each town. So he's in our town like last week of each month, and he'll be in Coventry 1 week, Tallinn 1 week, and Mansfield 1 week. That's been what I've been doing. So, Mike.
So probably the one thing that I guess I just want to cover is sort of a follow-up to 1225 Boston Turnpike. Been trying to get them moving. I had a meeting on site late last week, or sorry, 2 weeks ago, with the property owner and the occupant or tenant who's basically responsible for the work. And there was one item, which I think we've talked about before, that we've been working with them on, that is sort of the linchpin, if you will, in that it's very cost prohibitive, but also it's prohibitive of their use of the site. And so I met with them to kind of go over some of the other items. And I think I've told you that other than just this last item, which is effectively falls into the category of fencing, everything else is pretty much done. They're trying to wrap it up. And so I'm trying to get them sort of over the finish line. They sent me a description of what it is they're asking for to be considered. I've looked at it. I talked a little bit with Patrice about it. I'm going to pull up a rudimentary sketch that I just put together so that I could show you. But the approved site plan requires that between the central building and the building on the left, which is occupied by the shamrock tree, there is a 10-foot tall swinging gate. The problem they're running into is that a gate of that size and height requires sort of substantial construction, because the opening between the two buildings is quite large. He was able to get someone to give him a quote, and I think he was talking, you know, like $20,000. From his perspective, the gate will never be closed because he can't open and close the gate with the trucks coming in and out. The approval that this commission gave them doesn't require the gate to be closed. So he would spend $20,000 on a gate, which will effectively be swung open in the field in perpetuity. I don't know that that works for anyone, but I don't want to make that call. So he's basically proposed, and again, no one can laugh at my sketch here. I don't know, will I be able to share? Yeah, here we go.
You can't share?
I can, yep.
Okay.
So what he's proposed, or we sort of talked about, is something very similar to this, that basically a section of fence off this side of the building, a section of fence off that side of the building, and then a section of fence on this side of the driveway with plantings in front of it to effectively create that same visual barrier so you cannot see through those buildings beyond to the back of the site without restricting any flow of the site. He's got large equipment, and the radius that they need to be able to turn in and out of that gate, it's just not something that really, really works for him. And I'm not, don't want to seem as if I'm advocating for him, because I understand it was on the plan and he was the applicant and it is what it is. But this is sort of the last piece. Once he gets this figured out, he's got to install the fencing along the back right corner of the building. And, you know, we should be in the home stretch. So I did not give him an indication as to whether or not I felt this was acceptable on my own. I said I would talk with you all. I don't know the intent of what some of this, why some of this kind of got there, but it's kind of where we are.
Is this up to us to take a vote on and agree to, or?
So the regulations provide a little bit of flexibility for sort of post-approval minor modifications. So I think that's sort of the land that we're in right now, where, you know, you're looking at something which is not exactly what was put on the plan, but it, but making a determination in your review if it meets this, the spirit of what was required. It's still going to be fenced. It's still going to be the same height. It's still going to, in theory, you know, the goal is to restrict the visual screening of that back portion. It just will not be in the form of a gate within that driveway.
This looks like a good solution to me, and it also, I think, falls within the scope of a minor modification. My only comment would be, I don't think you should have a straight piece of fence. It should have at least one bend in it, so it has some better structural stability. But otherwise, I think that would be fine.
I have one question.
Other members could comment.
I had one question. Mike, does this increase the town's liability at all? Liability changing the fence? Are we liable because of this modification?
No, you know, I think that given the sort of extreme engineering required to get a make a gate that large and the intent of the reg, you know, this is not like a retaining wall or some other performance type of site improvement where it's providing some function, holding back fill or screening, you know, parking lot lights or anything along those lines. It's truly just a visual buffer. And so I think that buffer will be maintained. So I don't think that you're putting yourselves in any sort of hot water with future applications or things previously approved.
I just wonder the town's liability, seeing that we're making a change, that's all. The town could be liable for anything because the other gate would have kept people out, I think. I'm just grasping the straws because I'm always thinking about the liability once we modify something. So I think the modification is fine, but I just want to check from the liability.
The approved plans calls it a privacy fence, right, Mike?
Yes.
And I think if it, my memory of the conversation with them was part of the problem with how we even got them to get into an application was because of the mess of the site from the road, the view from the road. So the privacy fence was or gate was put up so that, you know, the trucks and whatever he's got in there wouldn't be seen from the road. But if he's going to have a fence and he's going to keep it open all day long, you'd see it. So I think this actually does a better job of screening. And I think once it's up, I think, Mike, if you, there maybe should be some caveat that once it's up, if you can still see in there, maybe he needs to add another section or something on, you know, to either end of it or whatever. But it allows him to go in and out, and it allows us to get the coverage of the view that you don't want to see from the street.
So this fence is more of a line of sight fence as opposed to a safety factor.
Yeah, it was never meant to be, you know, like a locking fence to keep security. It wasn't a security fence or anything like that.
Okay. And there's a height already attached to it, I assume. 8 foot or whatever?
Ten.
Ten, yeah. think Tom is right. It should be two pieces to hold it up, and it should just maybe caveat that it be maintained. And that's about it. But I think it's a great idea. Good job.
Yeah, I'm also on that same page. I think it's a good compromise, good potential solution. I think it's germane to the original scope. I think it's within the boundaries, and I think, you know, I think it works for all parties involved.
Okay, duly noted. We'll clarify our expectations for what, you know, they'll need to do, and communicate that with them so we can get it wrapped up.
Yeah, Mike, come in, Arlene.
I think the new plan is a better plan. I'm just visualizing a 10-foot tall fence. I'm wondering if standard 7 isn't sufficient at the not connected to the buildings, but the one that's out further. It'll be, I don't know. It seems to me that a standard 7-foot might be even better than a 10-foot, because it wouldn't be such a sail in the wind.
Wouldn't be so bold.
What's that, Tom?
I said it wouldn't be so bulbous.
Yeah. So I, and Tom's point about it being structurally sound, I think it's probably easier to hold a 7-foot fence in place than a 10-foot fence. But just if it'll do the same thing, because the sight line is human eye level or car level, correct? But I have a feeling 7 feet will probably be sufficient.
Yeah, I can, I mean, pull up the street view. Yeah, I mean, they certainly don't want to put up a 10-foot fence because it requires a lot more construction with footings and design. I don't know if you can see my cursor, but if you see that wood, see that sort of that wood line behind this white trailer, that is 10 feet in height. So yes, it you're going to have probably a 25-foot section of fence that's going to be up front here at 10 feet in height, you know, significantly closer to the road. It's going to appear quite tall, being sort of by itself.
From looking at this, it seems to me Patrice's idea of having it be a little bit longer in length and a little bit shorter in height would probably be visually more pleasing. It would cover more of the mess and probably be a little bit stronger.
It's difficult to get too far out. The first picture Mike showed that he's got a driveway there, so he's got to be able to get in and out of there. So I don't know if he can angle it off the sides, Mike, or not. If he can, then maybe that helps. I don't know if the site goes up in topography from the road or flat or down. It's hard to tell.
It dives. As you get towards the back, it dives.
Okay.
Yeah, Jim Cropley, you know, I mean, instead of having him go through the cost of the fence, why couldn't we require him to put a row of evergreens around the curve of the driveway? And that way there, that would block it. I'm across the street. I mean, and if I look over there and I saw this 10-foot tall fence, I'm just going to look silly. And what is he going to put in front of it as to protect it? I mean, he's not going to put...
We would have him put something planted in front of it, Jim.
No, but I mean, it's never going to cover that.
Oh. Yeah. No.
So if he put a row of arborvitaes along that whole curve, it would block everything out. It would fill in really quickly. And the money he's going to spend on putting a 10-foot fence up, he could buy larger shrubs and put them in there. And then he would never have to worry about a fence, because I think the fence is going to look ridiculous.
Is he going to salt that road though? Because things will be dead in a year.
He's not going to salt that road. It's it's blacktop. It's crushed. What do you call it? Aggregate or,
Millings.
Not going to salt that.
All right.
And it's far enough from the road. I mean, that's just an, I just thought, I just think having a 10-foot tall fence there, and then you're going to try to cover it. What are you going to cover it with? And he's not going to put 10-foot tall trees in front of it to cover it. So I don't know. That would just, you see how it has like a curve to it?
Mm-hmm.
If you did the inside of that curve and he planted some, you know, maybe requiring to put you know, 6 foot arborvitaes or whatever in there, something that doesn't get wide. They'll never bother his turning radius, and he can just plant those instead of putting in a fence. But that's just my opinion.
I think the trees would be more attractive from the road.
Definitely. Yep.
I concur.
And I think the cost factor for him, especially he's in the industry, he could buy the trees wholesale. So that wouldn't be a problem for him. And for him to construct a 10-foot tall fence, I mean, that's going to have to have some pretty massive ballast in it to stop it from blowing, because it's windy up there. And the wind's going to blow right through that opening because it comes right across the street to us. So that would be my only concern. Just a comment.
Oh, Mike, if you decide to move to trees, you could even plant more. You could get around farther on that circle too, and then you might not be as much of a deal. But I would have something in there about being able to maintain them should they die. Maybe you have more. Maybe they're planted instead of the normal height. He gets a little bigger ones because we're taking the fence away.
I can talk with him about. Yeah, there's things that can be done there. And yeah, I think that there are more aesthetically pleasing options than that fencing. I think keeping the fence that's along those portions of the building just to shorten that field of view, and then planting that inside portion of that turn is probably going to be much more aesthetically pleasing. I checked the site plan while you guys were chatting, and there's about a 6 foot drop in elevation from where the trees would be to the back of the site. So you're picking up that extra height as you go. So I think we can come up with something that'll work.
We leave that in Michael's hands to decide from here on.
Yeah, I think that's what the discussion is.
I say we do.
Yeah, I don't think we need to vote on this at this point.
Mike, I just had one more question.
Sure.
You know, when they come out, if you go past that going towards Coventry, is that's old Coventry Road, right?
Yep.
Was he supposed to do something there?
Yes, we had this discussion, and they're supposed to be two planted evergreens or something. And he mentioned, I'll have to look to see if I have it in my notes. There were supposed to be two evergreen low shrubs to block access. And he said that there was something else that he either had put or wanted to put there because of some servicing or something related to the power pole that's there. I can't remember what that discussion was, but he knows that access has to be blocked there. I'll follow up with him on that when I'm talking to him about the fence.
Okay, no problem. It's just that someone put up two little pieces of fence that are about a foot tall and about 3 foot wide, the little white plastic fence. And I didn't know if that was a joke or if that was a requirement.
Yeah, well, if it is that their intent on satisfying that, we'll have to address that. It certainly, that is not going to cut it.
Now, that's actually a place where they're going to have a really hard time putting shrubs or trees in, because that is going to get tons of road salt. And both towns push snow in there. The state pushes the snow over there, and so does the town of Bolton, just as a note.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the hang-up is that, you know, there was a thinking that people were going to be utilizing that driveway. The driveway, more or less, is gated all the time. They come in and out of there if they have large equipment, but it's not open for use. So, you know, that those trees are not really providing much of a function. I don't know how many people are really going to try to cut over there, maybe, but we'll figure something out so that isn't something that can happen. But I agree, those trees are not going to last.
Right. And I mean, that
pole is a pretty prominent pole because they're always working on that pole. And that's a really bad corner. So they always park on the right side of the pole, which is in that area. So I would not be in favor because they work on that line all the time because we lose our phone service, we lose everything, and they're constantly over there. So
I've never seen it. He put the gate up, and I've never seen anyone go out the gate.
Yeah. The other issue is that two of the three trees proposed are within the state right away. So, you know, he can put them up and they could come right back down. Obviously, he's got no control over that. So we'll come up with something. You know, I think that's probably not going to be a huge issue, but he knows that the plans require that something be there to prevent access between the driveways.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe a couple of boulders. I don't think the salt will. Yeah,
salt won't destroy.
Yeah, I think they actually have some on site, so we can definitely look at that.
Attractive boulders, Mike.
Yes.
None of those unattractive.
I can't even begin to think about having a discussion about ugly boulders and attractive boulders.
Make sure they're flagged if the plows go hitting those things in the winter. We'll be replacing state plows.
Granite boulders and bluestone boulders.
Do you have anything else to report on, Mike?
Not that I can think of at the moment. We I guess the only other enforcement action that we had pending sort of in a significant way was the 17 Howard Bolton Notch RV, I believe is the name. And so we had basically issued orders to both properties at the same time. So they have provided engineered plans following receipt of my cease and desist. We sent those to Joe Dillon. They made payments for that technical review to happen. The revised plans were also sent to Joe Dillon, and we recently got those comments back from him, and he's effectively finds them to be acceptable. So the issues of the drainage calculations and those things which were outstanding before appear to be calculated appropriately, and the design does not create some of the issues that I think were originally of concern. So next week, I'll sync up with Jim to make sure that some of the other issues related to the zoning side of things are addressed and that we haven't missed anything. And it looks like we are moving in the right direction with that one as well. So we can hopefully get that one, clear the decks of that as well.
Jim Cropley again, Mike. What are they doing across the street from the new the Moo Mobile Station or Alltown?
Across the street.
There's two houses back there, and they've been doing construction back there, and finally someone put in silt fence.
What actually? The multiple dwellings?
It's across the street from the new, from the old mobile station.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit up the hill.
Oh, Minicucci.
They have the multiple dwellings.
Okay.
That one has, there's some mobile homes and a two family, I think, and a three family that they were doing some renovations for, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Oh, it looks like they tore everything down and just fixed the two houses up. They've been working in there every day nonstop. I was just wondering.
Yeah, we had met with them several months ago to sort of figure out what nonconformities truly existed and what, you know, what didn't. To get a better sense of what is allowable. There was discussion about fire access and some other things. So we were trying to kind of get a lay of the land. So I think they're in the initial stages of that. They did a lot line reconfiguration because they had two houses, I think, were on one lot originally. And yeah. One of them was a duplex. So they're cleaning it up.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Is there anything more on the regulations regarding the cultivation, sale, and distribution of adult use of cannabis?
We sent you basically a draft to discuss and decide. It's got a little bit of everything in there. There's, I think, the front end of the draft has a prohibition, and the back end of the draft is if you want to allow, and what you got to decide what you want to allow and what you don't want to allow, and we can move from there.
Okay, was that, and that was in the packet.
It was, yep.
Do any of the members have questions about that? Because we've still got a few months to go on the moratorium.
What page in the packet does that section begin?
Okay, hang on a second.
It's a big packet.
It is, I know. Sorry about that. Give me just a second, Quan, and I can. So it is on. Oh, no, I was going to say it was on the supplemental packet, but I don't think so. Would have had to have been before, right before the application for Fleming. So it would be on camera. I'm almost there here. Page come 90. Nope. Page.
Can you just send up supplemental packages for each one of these rather than connect them all together?
I don't have control over that. It begins on page 81 and goes for 81, 82, and 83. And I could put it up on the...
If you could, please. My computer is actually not too happy with the size.
Got you. Sure. How's that?
That works.
Okay. I can probably make it a little bigger too, if that helps. Oop. There you go. So basically the prohibition language is the first part of this, section 5, which is just prohibits it everywhere. The second part under section 10, and might just kick in here when I misspeak, but currently section 10 is golf courses, and what is being proposed here is that you just turn section 10 into special provisions, and golf courses would remain in its current place, 10A through G. And then you would add the cannabis establishment after that. And then anything you want to do, you could keep adding to the special provision sections if you needed to.
What's with the nonprofit part?
Engaged. Where are you, Emma?
It was like number cannabis establishments, the purpose, definition of terms, and then the cannabis establishment, a nonprofit persons or business entity otherwise engaged. Doesn't seem to have a place in here, but out of the clear blue, it's a nonprofit all of a sudden. Or is that just a generic term that's needed for in case a church wants to get involved?
It's it just covers all of them. So it could be a nonprofit person or business entity. It just is meant to cover anyone and everyone.
Wow. I don't think nonprofits should be involved in that, but okay.
So these definitions come straight out of the act. So this is how they're defined by the Department of Consumer Protection. So we're just pulling those terms exactly so that if they, in their infinite wisdom, change the requirements again, we have, you know, consistency.
Got it. Okay.
So in the allowances, you have the purpose section. There's a set of definition of terms, as Mike just said. I don't know. Tell me if I'm scrolling too fast. This is the section here where we would need to discuss with you where and how you want things allowed. Took a stab at it. This is not in stone. This is up to you. So you've got the three business zones, basically. It's actually probably Mike. I'm just looking at this. It should be probably GB as opposed to B. I don't know. Yeah, GB. The GMUIZ is the gateway zone, the business zone, and the industrial zone. It's basically Route 44 and Route 6.
I thought we were going to limit this to an industrial use.
You can limit the cultivator to an industrial use, but you're not going to want, probably if you're going to allow retail, you're not going to probably put that in the industrial zone.
That's true too.
So if you want, you've got cultivator and microcultivator, if you want to limit that to the industrial zone, then this here would be an X.
I think we should do that.
Yeah, so part of the reason why this is written the way that it is, I guess it's twofold. One, from a text amendment perspective, you can always make changes which are more restrictive. So what you refer to CROG, you know, you want to have it as wide open as you think you're comfortable, and then you can always tighten it up. The other thing is that the next section, which I think is 4, gets into the siting requirements. So when you start to look at where these things can go, 500 feet to, you know, certain uses, 1,000 feet to similar uses, et cetera, you really do start to restrict even within those zones. So 500 feet to any child daycare facility, park, playground, school, or church, ultimately, again, is really going to restrict where a retailer is going to be able to go. And on the cultivation side, there is a separating distance, again, for, I believe it's written in as a residential structure. A lot of folks are concerned about smell. So you've got those separating distances, again, between like uses. The cultivators are going to want, you know, probably 60,000 square feet or more. They're going to need access to water. So they're not just going to drop anywhere. But that really is going to restrict beyond just the zones where these things can actually be located.
Is it our intent at this moment to go through line item by line item, or it appears as though that there's a lot of information that's required on here. Should we be taking a stab at it at this moment?
I mean, the intent was that you would hopefully look at it and let us know, you know, what you think. Do you want to allow cultivation? Do you want to allow it only in certain areas? Do you not want to allow it? Same questions with, you know, retailers and dispensaries, and, you know, then we can further craft the regulation how you want to do it. If you want to do this as a group discussion, we can do that. I would, you know, since we've got time in our moratorium, I would, you know, give it a time limit and go from there if you want to do it that way, but whatever. I'm not the chairman.
It's almost like we want to print it out and make our own little comments on it, send it in, and try to compile a consensus?
I don't know enough about it to feel comfortable. I have a better comfort level discussing it with board members. I don't have a comfort level with this whole industry to do any kind of decisions on my own.
But the cultivating part, the sales part is kind of like package stores, right? We got to kind of stick with that. But the cultivating part, yes, I wouldn't know where to go with that.
Did you do a quick build out, Mike, based on the tolerances, like where
I didn't, only because I don't know what all the other uses are. We can certainly look at that, but one of the things that I will say is, in different towns, I've been involved in applications for retail and for cultivation. So I am like pretty familiar with what the applications look like in some of the operation, not necessarily the science, but I can try to pull some of that data. We were talking about it the other night in a retail facility at peak hour, roughly 3,000 square feet, will generate roughly 138 trips per day on their busiest day total. That was what the traffic report studied. So if there's certain questions you have, I can try to pull those examples, sort of real life examples, and provide them so you can get a small sense of what they might look like.
I'd be happy to print this out and mail it to you guys so you have it if you'd prefer that. And if you want, take a look at putting together maybe a map of where things would be allowed and distances from the things we've got listed here, schools and churches and whatever, could try give it a shot at that. Does that help?
Yeah, and just kind of put in like hours of operation or whatever. So just, I mean, these.
Yeah, that's in here.
It was in there.
Well, yeah, it just says hours of operation.
I think that would be helpful. And then I think page by page would be.
Yeah, that looks easy.
If we each have one, we've read it, we have ideas. I think page by page is probably not a bad way to go with all the
this isn't
it out, maybe even have a subcommittee of people who are really interested in it to work on it with Mike and get back to the committee as a whole.
I think this is something we should all discuss.
I do too.
We don't want to do it now because we're almost at our curfew, but I think this is a good first pass.
Patrice, I'll take a package if you're willing to print it and mail
sure.
it.
Sure, I'll do that and send it out to everybody. And then you all can take a look at it and you know, feel free to send questions or comments ahead of the next meeting. And if not, you know, redline your copy and we can start discussing it at the next meeting page by page. I mean, what we've got here is three pages, right, Mike? One, two, three pages. So, I mean,
it really isn't that much, right?
It's not that much, but it is, you know, you want to see how this will affect the town and areas in the town, I think. And like Mike said, this is just sort of a first step at based on what, you know, we heard from you in the beginning. So,
well, obviously we all need definitions. Or explain to us what a cultivator versus a micro cultivator versus a hybrid retailer would be. So those are things that I wouldn't know what's what. I mean, I would know what a cultivator is, but you know, where's the dividing line? A 400 square feet versus 3,000 square feet, and a cultivator versus micro.
And
Yeah, it's all in those, it's in those definitions, and in it, and you're correct, it is based upon size. So hybrid cultivator, you know, hybrid is obviously someone who grows and sells and has the license to do with the medical, versus cultivator and micro cultivator. Again, and they come right out of the act, so that we're not trying to regulate them differently than they would obtain a that license type from the state. So yeah, I mean, I would say run through it and you know, don't worry about what you don't know, because actually the less you know is better, because then we'll find out if there's gaps in what we're not addressing. If you feel there's something that you don't understand and you feel isn't in the reg, then we know what we need to include. But, you know, I think that a lot of people, you know, have concerns about what it is, but from the Planning and Zoning Commission's perspective, the other way to look at it is just from the use. There's been a lot of discussion about them being related to liquor on the retail side, but from a use perspective, it is far, far more related to a pharmacy. And there's a lot of discussion in the land use law community about whether or not the liquor store use is what we'd have to treat it as, or really if it should be a pharmacy. So when you're thinking about how this operates, and I can show you sample floor plans from towns nearby that have got these applications, it's basically a pharmacy. Trips per day, frequency in and out, how long they spend in the building. That's really what it looks like from a use perspective. So maybe that'll help.
Yeah, I think trips per day is a biggie there. You're going to get way more trips in something like this than you are going to get in a package store. I think you think package store just because of what it is. And from the pharmacy perspective, it's not because it's medical. It's just because that's the way it's used. So that's the, again, the trips per day and the number of people are and how long they're in there and what have you.
So I guess some of my other questions would be, food and beverage manufacturer, how would that come into play versus a product packager? Would that come into play at all in this thought process?
Well, they're individual license types, so in theory, you could regulate them differently. Those are effectively sort of industrial manufacturing type uses. You know, they're not doing any direct to the public stuff happening on the property. And you'll see at the top, there are certain things, you know, delivery service, for example, is not included because you can't regulate it. It's not subject to zoning. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that's why you're seeing that we're treating that more as an industrial type of use. But yeah, I would say go through the definitions and we can try to provide some clarity if there's things that don't seem to make sense or aren't descriptive enough.
Tom, I think Quan has his hand up.
Sorry, Quan.
Yep, so we seem to be going towards embarking on doing this review, personal kind of review exercise after this particular meeting. So I just want to just pose the question, because I know there are some rules around communications outside of a meeting. So when we actually make our edits and comments, are we just to funnel those back to Patrice?
Yes. Or,
okay.
Yeah, just to me. And we can compile everybody's comments and put them into one thing, or put them into the side of the document and then send it out to everyone. But yeah, you're safer and better just to correspond with me and or Mike, not with each other.
So I have a question. I don't know that much about this, but so the states are the ones who are legalizing this state by state, but it's still a federal offense, correct?
Currently, yes.
So what, it's my understanding that these places that are in business are very strict about how they accept payment and how many people they let in and how they handle that. So if we're allowing a state business that is legal that is still a federal offense, how do you protect the town? Or do we not worry about it?
Well, this has come up in a couple of places. I think it's sort of a double-edged sword because the state has said, if you don't come up with regulations to address it, an applicant can show up tomorrow and submit an application and you have to treat it like a similar use, which again is more likely a pharmacy than a liquor store. So I guess you've got to weigh the options between, or are we more likely to, if we do nothing, to say, to see an applicant show up and have them cram something down our throats? Or are we more likely to have the federal government come down and say, you shouldn't be doing this? I think that, you know, the sense is because so many towns or states rather are moving in this direction that you're going to see something happen federally. But I know of maybe two or three towns that have basically said it's illegal federally. We're not doing anything about it. Sue us. I don't know how that's going to work. I guess it remains to be seen.
I think it's important to have regulations in place and do it, but is there a legal aspect that we can put into the regulations we build that for one protects the town, but I mean, I guess anybody that opens a business that they know is federally illegal, they are taking their chances.
I think that there is an argument to be made. It's not written with that way, though it would be great to be able to sit here and take credit that, oh, look, we built in this other little parachute. But I think there's an argument to be made that the last section of the regs, which requires an operator to consistently maintain, to obtain and consistently maintain their state license, that the town is doing nothing more than being a party to a license, which is really controlled by the state. We can give everybody a permit to sell cannabis, but they can't do it because the state really controls that. So I think you might be able to make an argument there somehow. I don't know. Am I grasping at straws?
I'm just curious to know if other towns have been concerned that, sure, it's legal in the state, but federally, if the federal government wants to come down on you, what happens to the town?
I have a curiosity. You have suggested things like 500 feet away from daycare, 1,000 from a church, school. What if they come in and start an operation, it's going good, and somebody wants to put up a daycare across the street? Are they not able to do that?
This also has come up. I think it's not a two-way distance. So it's not a no-build zone for both uses. The protected use, if you will, which in this case is the daycare, I think certainly waives their right to that buffer zone. If they want to be next door, they certainly can be, because we're focusing on protecting that use. And if they don't have an issue with that, then we wouldn't mandate it on them. But I don't know, maybe Patrice feels differently, but.
No, I think that's correct. And it actually works that way currently with liquor stores. Most towns have a buffer zone around the installation of a liquor store. That doesn't mean that somebody can then open a daycare next door to it, because it's like Mike said, it's not a no build on both ways. It's the liquor store, or in this case, the cannabis store that you're buffering around. I understand what you're saying, Tom. I would find it, I've never seen somebody come in and try to put in a daycare next to a liquor store or a church next to it or school, those kind of things. I mean, the only thing that you really probably would see would be a daycare, because the other things are pretty well, schools and churches and stuff are fairly well established already. I mean, it's rare you get a new church or a new school coming in, but yeah, I've not seen it happen.
Well, just a hypothetical.
Yeah. Not that it wouldn't happen, but I've not seen it happen.
We are at our curfew. Is there any need to discuss this or because we're going to continue to bring this up until we pass it. We don't have to act tonight. Or are we ready for Jim Cropley?
I move it.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Great. We will see you in October, and I will send out a packet, including the regulation and maybe just to look at some of the surrounding distances from what we've proposed, at least, so we can take a look.